You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has opened its doors for the first day of a new trading week and the first day of the last full trading week, because I think next week there's a public holiday, but that need not detain us. With me is Greg Davies, our resident tame commentator, who's the head of wealth at Kratos Capital. And also at Greg Davies' insistence, we have a chap by the name of Nick Kunze, who's from Sanlam Private Wealth. Greg, why did you send me a message saying we need to have Nick Kunze on the show?
Back by public demand.
Yeah, he was giving such a lovely breakdown of the week ahead and the various closeouts and what have you. And I thought, yeah, we need to maybe up our game a bit and have a real expert on the pod.
I'm flattered.
Because I was unaware of most of the things he was talking about.
Okay, well, we'll come to that in a moment. That's a lovely accolade for you, Nick, and welcome, by the way. But maybe, Nick, you can give us your international geopolitical assessment, because apparently the Yemeni Houthis attacked Aramco, Saudi Arabia's Aramco's facilities with their loaded drones, and the Americans are saying no, it's far too sophisticated, and geographically it couldn't have happened because it came from this angle and it did this and I didn't understand it. But no matter what, the short-term supply of oil was compromised over the weekend. What do you make of it?
Yeah, morning, gents. Yeah, it's unless you're pretty much stuck on Mars for the last 48 hours, I mean, that has been the only story dominating the news wires this morning. That was, as you said, the attack on Saudi Arabia. I mean, as we came in this morning in the early hours, as the oil markets opened at 1 o'clock our time in Joburg, oil prices up as much as 20% to $71 a barrel, although they have since softened a bit. But this is the real story. And you had obviously Trump blaming Iran at one point, which is unproven, and all sorts of geopolitics and all the different nations getting involved. But it really is the only story dominating. Strong oil prices and a bit of a risk off theme this morning.
Greg,
the fact that oil price, that oil price jumping. I mean, that basically is the biggest one-day surge in oil futures contracts since that contract existed. So put it in perspective, it is a big one.
That is absolutely extraordinary. Greg, for once, I probably agree with, not Trump, because he doesn't know what he's doing. And when people say the Trump administration, there's no Trump administration. You take the Trump out.
It's the one man. It's the same as Kratos.
Anyway, I think on this occasion, the Iranians have been very clever, and I would finger them on this matter, because there's no love lost between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and indeed between Iran and the rest of the Middle East region. I don't think so. Perhaps there is some wheels within wheels going on here.
Yes, and I mean, just as we were chatting, I logged into Donald Trump's Twitter handle, because I mean, this is where you're going to get the real story from. And sometimes you want to read these things for so much talk, but I think he was saying they know who it was and they locked and loaded. But I'm going through his other things. I think you get the feeling he doesn't want the oil price to spike. So he's saying strategic, there's plenty of oil to go around, and the strategic reserves and all of that he's going to release.
I don't understand why he doesn't want the oil price to go up, given the fact that the United States of America is the world's biggest producer.
Short, yeah.
What is that? Does he not understand the economics of the basic economics?
No, he's got a position on with one of his brokers and he doesn't want to run away from him now.
Okay, well, let's get straight on to, before we get on to the week ahead, let's get straight on to the reaction of the market. Oil price up around about 9% at the moment, as you quite rightly said, Nick Kunze, was up about 20% on the news. But what's happened to Sasol, Greg?
Yeah, Sasol's the big story of the morning. Keep in mind, it closed on Friday at 278.55, which was up quite a lot from the lows already, but it's trading at the moment at 298 Rand, which is up 7%. You know, you can see 7% moves in smaller counters, but this is a 186 billion market cap. So it's a huge move. And I mean, everyone was writing Sasol off, myself, I think, being one of them. But this is an unexpected prop up. I'm not sure I would go long Sasol at these levels for the long term. You know, this may be a temporary spike, but certainly it's impressive for now.
Okay.
And throw in there a bit of a weaker rand too, also giving probably a couple of percent to that Sasol price too.
Exactly. Simple people like me, if I was a Sasol investor, I'd say, what's the rand doing? It's weaker. What's the oil price doing? It's stronger. So you've got the double whammy to the upside, and therefore you have to be long of it. But Nick, do you think it's a short-term phenomenon? Because from what I understand, is the United States has very large reserves of oil that they can release into the market. You can't just press a button and do so, but they can make arrangements. So if there is a short-term shortfall, then the United States can act. And also Aramco itself has reserves strategically placed geographically around the world. One of the facilities is very close to me in Amsterdam. So it's not, I don't think it's a long-term phenomenon.
It's not a long-term phenomenon, but you're referring to the strategic oil reserves which the US have. It's not a long-term phenomenon, but the extent on how much oil has been taken off the market is quite high. So, I mean, to put it in perspective, they're saying it's around about 5 million barrels per day, which would actually be the single biggest outage from any incident. And it's equal to more than about, I think, 5 or 6% of the global supply. And that spike that we've seen in the oil price is basically the largest spike in percentage terms since Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. And when was that, 1991, remember that was. So the amount that's coming off the market is quite significant. And I guess the next point now we know what it is. The next stage is figuring out, well, how soon can they get production back up? How quickly can they ramp up? Yeah. And that's mixed. I mean, there's all sorts of reports coming out, and it's been quite thin on that sort of news front respect. So, yeah, I don't know. Look, so yes, it is a short-term thing, but, you know, short-term, is it one day? Is it 1 week? Is it 2 weeks? You know, oil closer to $100 a barrel is not good for the world economy. Right now, if they can contain it, as you said, it popped up $20. It's come back sort of $11, $12. It's a little bit softer now. But if it stays like this for another week or two, that long-term is not.
No, it's not. But I do believe that there's a lot of oil around, and people will make provisions. But the other thing that is quite disturbing, Greg, is that if the publicity that has been given for these drones that attacked the Aramco refinery facilities, people can say to themselves, well, if they can do it, then I can do it. I mean, as you say, you could probably go to Macro, Greg, buy a drone and bomb one of your broking rivals and put them out of business for a couple of days.
Now you've given me some ideas.
Obviously, that's being very facetious, but you see the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, you need explosive, unfortunately. But yeah, you need something really big for some of these competitors of ours. But yeah, but I suppose that's the thing, is the unknown unknowns, as Donald Trump once said. We don't know who's done this. We don't know if they're going to do it again tomorrow. We don't know what the repercussions are. So perhaps, you know, the Middle East, you know, it's always been a hotbed, really. So there's just too many things we don't know at the moment. But as Nick was saying, they need to obviously ramp up oil production. There's plenty of reserves around. I don't think this oil spike will last that long, but certainly entertaining while it is going.
And I think just to add to what Greg's saying, also that as he pointed out, there is plenty of oil reserves around. And in fact, it's been oil price up until the weekend has been frustratingly low and going nowhere ahead of this Aramco listing. So they have been cutting production. They've been trying to get Russia on board. OPEC have been trying to sort of flex their muscles and trying to get a pop in this oil price. So Greg's exactly right. I mean, it's not as if the oil price was high before this, you know. So
okay, let's have some fun now. What's the bid? What's the current bid on Sasol, please?
Sasol, let's give it to you. It's buyers at 298.18.
Okay, I'm selling at 298.18. Okay, it's a short-term trade. I'm a short-term punter. I'm selling 1,000 Sasol at 298.18. Okay, can you record that?
You see, you should always do the difficult trades. That's an easy trade. I'm scared of it. Later today, there could be another explosion somewhere.
I'm an easy person. Let's have a look at what's happening on the spot markets to give us the backdrop to the rest of our conversation, gentlemen. The dollar rand is 14.66. The British pound against the rand is 18.27. The euro rand is 16.24. The euro dollar is 110.80. Not much going on there. The euro and the dollar impervious to the commodities markets, which I'm going to give you now. The gold price, it's up $15. It's $15.03. Yeah. And the gold bulls get another lifeline because of drones. The platinum price is $9.55, which is up $6 per ounce. And palladium is $1,600, which is down $11, I think. Brent crude oil, $65.65, which is up 8.5% or $5.18. On the international stock markets on Friday, we saw the Dow Jones. It was a really routine session, up 37. But the Dow Jones futures, I thought they would be down more. They would be down more, rather. But they're down around about 105 points at the moment. And other world stock markets also a little bit jittery. Nick Kunze, world stock markets seem to be immune to this event, which in the old days would be quite impactful.
Yeah, it would have been. But I think also put into context that, you know, one man's, on one side, someone's making money. This is silver lining elsewhere. And one man's tragedy, I guess, is someone else's triumph. I mean, look at those oil companies in Asia. I mean, we had all the Aussie shares, Woodside Petroleum, you know, BHP Billiton up strongly, Santos up 4%. I can go through the whole list. I mean, PetroChina up almost 6%, which I guess makes the equity indexes not look so bad. And I guess, you know, down 0.5% in the S&Ps is not the end of the world. I mean, it seems to be a reasonably controlled sort of mood about this market, although it is a chocker week with central banks, as we said on the start of the show. So there's quite a bit coming up on the diary.
Yes, indeed. I mean, maybe the oil price isn't that important, because even though Donald Trump doesn't want it, Greg, we still have renewable energy. We've got solar and we've got windmills, as he calls them, windmills.
I don't think he knows. I think he's picturing those things which you have in Holland.
I can see one right. I'm looking out the window now, and there's one whizzing around above the skyscrapers of Rotterdam, and I love it. Yeah. It gives me great comfort to see that thing going around. Stock Exchange News Service now, gentlemen, 7:05 this morning. African Oxygen Limited. Who wants to start with that one?
Kanikika.
Oh, that's such a hospital pass. We don't even look at that, to be honest. And in fact, I think that it's pretty much the only thing that was on the news flow this morning.
Right? Now, there's a couple of other things, but Greg, you know Afrox, because I think one of your former colleagues in a previous existence used to love Afrox.
Yeah, it was one back in the day we kept a very close eye on. The numbers are out, and I mean, the share price, I see it's better bid than the last trade. It looks as though the share price will move stronger, even though the markets are a little bit choppy. It's trading at the moment at 19.75 rand, but there is a better bid. So far, 25,000 shares have traded. So not that brisk a trade, a market cap of 6.7 billion. Let me have a quick look at the numbers. See, they've increased the dividend by 5.8%, so the market will like that.
Okay, good. And if I go up the list, we've got Rhodes Food Group Holdings Limited trading update for the 10 months ended July. And Nick Kunze is going to say it's not one we look at, so I'm going to go back to Greg Davies.
Yes, his group turnover for the 10 months period in July increased by 9.6%. So they've got quite good numbers. But as we often go on these smaller caps that don't trade that often, it hasn't traded yet. Last trade is at 16.98. It's where it's offered now, buys at 15.50.
Nick Kunze, the reason you're here is because apparently you collated a lot of information that sets the scene for this week. So maybe we go through that, please, before we go to the major movers on the JSE.
Yeah, thanks, Lindsay. Yeah, so, I mean, just if you look at what we have a real central bank sort of fest this whole week. So, obviously, on the back of the ECB last week with their, as you all know, their QE, I don't know, what, 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know, whatever we're on, you know, they cut their rates further into negative territory. So, this week is the turn of the US Federal Reserve and Mr. Powell, and see if he's going to be bashed by by Mr. Trump. And I think the pressure is really on the Fed this week. So, that's the big one for me on the Wednesday. But besides that, we have the banks England, we've got Japan, we've got Brazil, Ghana, Indonesia, Norway, Switzerland, and of course, don't forget our own South African Reserve Bank, the SARBOT, on Thursday too. So it really is a chocker week with central banks, and if the trend is anything to go by, expect more rate cutting, although South Africa is expected to remain pat for now. But it really is it's a week full of central banks, and I guess that's the only game in town at the moment.
Yeah, I just wonder if the South African Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee has a look and says, goodness me, the oil price has just spiked by 10%. The rand has just weakened by around about 1.2%, something like that. And so everything that we were going to talk about on Wednesday and Thursday is our agenda has been shifted somewhat. Do you reckon that's the case, or do you think that they have a focused medium and long-term view here?
Well, I mean, our SARB is traditionally more hawkish bunch on the MPC, and they haven't been shy about saying that. But if you look at some of our latest inflation prints, I mean, the bank's midpoint is between that 3 to 6% band. And the last inflation prints were below that band. So, you know, inflation is nowhere to be seen along with the rest of the world. It's certainly the same in South Africa. Look, they might get a bit of a cushion. There is an argument with the rand at 14.60 opposed to it was out at 15.50 a couple of weeks ago.
Could be a gap, yes.
Yeah, you could argue that they might have room to cut a quarter, but I think for now you've got to be very careful. Emerging markets will traditionally, with a spike in oil price, is not generally good for emerging markets. So I think they're actually not in a bad spot right now. You know, our SARBOP, they're okay. They've got a bit of room to play with if they need to, but I think they'll sit in their hands and be unchanged.
A pillar of stability in an otherwise volatile South African world.
You're in quite a well-respected group too.
A little bit too conservative for my liking. I'd like them to come out and say, you know what, we've had instead of the normal cup of tea we had at the meeting, we've had a couple of sherries and we're going to cut interest rates by 1.5%. But Greg Davies, anything on the corporate front this week? What are you looking at ahead of the short week next week, I think it is?
Yeah, you know, I think Sasfin is reporting tomorrow, and I think we'll have David on, so we'll actually have it from the horse's mouth, and I'm quite looking forward to that. Obviously, the futures close out on Thursday. That should be quite big. And then there'll be
triple witching as well.
A rebalance of the JSE. And I suppose I think today, later, we get news from the JSE, or the 16th, on how they're going to rebalance with the NASPAS and the script with process and so on.
Mm. Just give me the significance of the triple witching, Nick Kunze, because it's when there are simultaneous expiries of various derivative instruments and can cause volatility. Just explain that to the layman.
So S&P 500, obviously, like we do, we have options and futures expire. So what happens in the U.S. on the S&P 500, so there's 500 biggest companies by market cap that trade in America. The derivatives that are linked to that S&P 500, in particular the futures and the options, all expire at the same time on the same day, which is this Thursday. So what typically happens, it does lead to an increase in volatility. And with volatility currently sitting pretty low at 15-odd%, there is the chance that we could get a real spike in some wild swings as we get closer to that Thursday expiry. So it just leads to more fun and games for what is already a busy week.
And a busy morning as well, because on the upside on the JSE Securities Exchange this morning, we have Sasol up around about 7%. That's my 15-minute delayed screen. Aspen up 3.6%. That's on a tear at the moment. Harmony up 3.25%. AngloGold Ashanti up 3.2%. And there's something called Vivo, which I'm not going to bother us with. But Greg, those stories there, we've done Sasol, but Aspen continues to go. People are sitting down and saying that presentation from Stephen Sard was actually quite encouraging. Let's get long of this thing.
You know, I'm just looking at the price and the price movement on Friday. It actually, in the first 2-3 hours of trade on Friday, it actually got to 99 rand, and it looked set to break that 100. And then it pulled back. By the end of the day, it was 94 rand 62. So this is another attempt to, it's 98.30 at the moment, to try and break that 100. It does feel like there's quite a few sellers there at 100. I suppose it's just a question of, does the market believe they can get, you know, on top of these debt issues? You know, a lot of that debt is, I think, in euros as well. And I think with them cutting rates and all that, the outlook just looks as though there's a window of opportunity for them to turn that situation around.
Nick Kunze, what is your attitude towards gold shares? Greg and I are old school. Traditional
gold bugs,
gold bulls. Well, I said bugs, but bulls. Yeah. When we can sense a trend, we go with it and we tag along.
Yeah.
We hold on to its coattails. The coattails are sort of slipping from my grasp at the moment, but I'm slightly encouraged by the fact that Harmony and AngloGold Ashanti are both up over 3%. What's your attitude towards gold?
So my personal attitude to gold. So we, as a house, don't have much exposure to it, but I could sit down. We had this conversation in the office recently. I mean, I could sit down with a client for an hour and argue quite convincingly why you should have some exposure to gold in the portfolio. And and with the QE, with the central, what the ECB did last week, just making the case stronger, and you've seen gold price react accordingly. So I'm on your side, guys. I think there's a strong argument in a world with rates going further below that zero bound, as they call it, there's a strong argument to why our gold should come back in favor. And it's been unloved for years. And I see you seeing now in the last year or so with this big spike up, I think there's a lot more further room to move. So that's my own personal view, and I actually quite like it, the gold story for now.
When you sit down with your clients, do you do what friends of myself and Greg's do, and that is, you know, buy physical gold, or do you go for ETFs, or do you go for the gold shares, or a combination of all of those that I just mentioned?
It's so interesting, because I had a conversation literally a few days ago where a client is sitting on a large portion of Krugerrands, and the big problem with Krugerrands in South Africa is the storage costs. Where do you store them, insurance, all the rest of it? But I think if you are new to this market and you're worried about what's happening with central banks and all the rest of it and QE, I think the gold ETFs, I think it's very easy to trade. It's cheap to get entrance to it. It's nice and liquid. You can sell when you want to, buy when you want to. So the new gold ETF is a lovely instrument. If you've got money offshore, the SPDR, the most liquid gold ETF offshore as well. There's some really, really nice instruments for you to get access to it. And there's no excuse. If you want access to gold, guys, it's cheap, it's easy, and it's simple.
Greg, you see what these millennials are doing? These easy, just press a button. They're taking the fun of it. Buy some gold, for goodness sake.
Look, I think Nick's right. If I had a choice of a Krugerrand or a gold ETF, I'd take the gold ETF just from the liquidity point of view and storage and all of that. But you know what's so interesting about this morning? We all saw oil spiking. Gold's going to ride on the back of this chaos trade. But a couple of my clients got caught on Wednesday when Draghi cut rates unexpectedly. Gold spiked to 1520. We piled in. Fast forward to Friday afternoon, gold's 1419. We're all got margin calls again. So this time we're being a little bit more cautious. We don't want to get the next suckers rally here.
Okay, let's have a look at the downside on the JSE today. We've now got Reunert down 5.5%, Investec Property, Intuprop, both down around about 2.25%, African Rainbow Minerals down 1.75%, and that Polish property company down 1.6%. So three property companies on the downside there. Is there any story there? Why are property companies coming down? Nick Kunze.
No,
apart from the fact that they're a dog with fleas.
I just look at our bond yields. You know, these property prices are so linked to our bond yields, and our yields are currently, you know, we've gone from quite a firm yield, 8.6% on our 10-year. We're back down to 8.1%. A weaker rand this morning, weaker yields, and all the interest rate sensitive stocks this morning on top of that, on the downside of the leaderboard, property shares, banks are a little bit softer too. So I think it's just that interest rate differential play at the moment.
Okay.
Besides the fact that dogs with fleas.
Yes, exactly right. And they've been the worst performing sector on the JSE last year, I think down around about 27%. Greg, give us the JSE indices, please, before you give us something to look forward to for the day, what you've dug up, as you are, of course, the digger. So start with the JSE indices, please.
Yes. I mean, I was expecting the market to be really weak, and we did look at those Dow futures, and they were down a bit. But so far, banks flat, really, down 0.02. Financials down 0.12. Industrials up 0.14. There's retailers up 0.08. Gold index is having a decent day, up 2.7. Platts up 1.1. Resources up 1%. And that leaves the all share up 86 points, 57,209. So it's nice to see that 57 we're managing to hold on to.
Mm. Okay. Are you looking forward to anything this week, Greg?
I think there is the consumer price index, the CPI, obviously on Wednesday. And I think, as you guys were referring to earlier, the Reserve Bank decision probably left unchanged, but it'd be interesting to listen to the speech around it and certainly the questions as well. Nick's quite right. I mean, this unexpected rally in the gold price should open a window for the Reserve Bank to maybe cut rates. My favorite thing is when they put out an announcement to say that their model has told them there's space for. Why can't they make up their minds themselves? Why do they need the model? But anyway.
Just also on Wednesday, Greg, we've also got retail sales out of SA, also one to watch. It's whether we like it or not, it does account for, it's obviously getting less and less, but it used to be 60% of our GDP with driving the economy of retail sales. So it's also one to watch in the for the guys out there.
Okay, my quote of the morning is this, and continuing the theme, Nick, I've been quoting from the great westerns from Hollywood, and with particular focus on Clint Eastwood. He had, one of his later films was called Pale Rider. It's the only film in the world where the first word in the film is Lindsay. The first word is Lindsay. So it's always been one of my favourite films. But anyway, a quote from the film is, a gentleman asks the preacher, who is played by Clint Eastwood, he says, "Do you imbibe?" And the preacher says, "Only after 9 a.m. And that is the opening for the first day of the new JSE Trading Week. Nick Kunzer is from Sandlam Private Wealth. Greg Davies is the head of wealth at Kratos Capital. And Greg will be back with me later on for the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.